It's good to be back. Let's talk about some cool books. Hi, my name is Marco and welcome to another episode of the Storyline Sessions podcast. If this is your first time here, welcome. I have talks with writers from all over the world, sharing different perspectives on creativity, storytelling and writing. If this isn't your first time here, thank you for coming back. It's been a minute since I've posted the last time, and actually it sounds better when I say a minute than the actual amount of time that has passed. Let's call this a second season. I'll talk more about myself in other videos and on Instagram, but this time the focus is on my guest. Norbert Živic is a Hungarian-born science fiction and fantasy author currently based in London, UK. His first book, Sealed Empire, rocking this awesome cover art, is an exciting blend of medieval fantasy and sci-fi with a memorable ending. Even though it's the start of a series, I think it also works as a standalone. It won the Best Fantasy Choice Award in Hungary in 2022, and it was translated to English by the translator that worked on the Hungarian version of A Song of Ice and Fire books. Norbert also just announced the special edition of Sealed Empire, and, in my humble opinion, it looks awesome. In this episode, we talked about mixing genres, finding your audience, working on a translation of your book, self-publishing in languages other than English, and even some Mortal Kombat competitive tournaments. So, grab a drink, get comfortable, and let's get into this week's storyline session with Norbert Živic. Enjoy! Hi Norbert, how are you?
Thank you Marco for the invite. I'm really glad we are able to talk. And you are from Serbia, as I heard. Like, actually I just wanted to ask, like, can you read Hungarian or just your native language?
Oh yeah, even though we are neighboring countries, I'm really bad with Hungarian. I like Hungary. I was in Budapest like recently and I went there a couple times, but just like some basic things that overlap. We have some words that overlap, but it's usually not like nothing similar. So unfortunately, but I'm willing to learn. So I think that at least I can pronounce your surname. It's Živic. So perfect. At least I got that.
That's actually the perfect pronunciation.
I'm glad to hear that, yeah. So welcome to Storyline Sessions. I was really excited to have you on, and especially when I heard that we're basically neighbors. And so let's jump off from there. You are, if I'm not mistaken, my first guest, or at least one of the first that actually have been translated, because I usually talk to authors that have written straight to English. So this is kind of a different thing for us. And being from a country that has like a, I won't say the same, but similar background and like stance towards fantasy and stuff like that, when you compare it to a global market in the West, could you maybe talk us through the fantasy scene in Hungary? How does that look like, and could you compare it maybe to people who are listening from the West? What are some key differences there?
So actually, hi, I just seen and experienced why I'm actually living in here in London. I'm from Hungary, but I'm living years here in London. Like the fantasy, like a traditional fantasy in the UK is more popular. And like my book is a mixed genre. So it's like fantasy and sci-fi together. And in my country, in Hungary, it's like, I think the sci-fi role, as a Hungarian author, we have like more sci-fi background than fantasy. And what fantasies we read is usually based on the British or American fantasy authors. So we have a few fantasy writers, but mainly, as I seen and I experienced, like we have more sci-fi authors. While it's actually a bit the difference in the UK, there is much more fantasy. And most of them is traditional fantasies, like, you know, swords, dragons, magic, which is not my thing. My book is more like a sci-fi based thing, because it's more like technological, and the mystery around it is everybody can see it is that technological. Even if you're just checking the cover, you can see.
Yeah, we'll get back to that as well. But like thinking about it, like do people tend to like gravitate towards the like fantasy sci-fi things? You said, okay, not traditional, but sci-fi, is it like a stronger genre there? Because I know here back in Serbia, a lot of genre fiction is still like a while back compared to like, I don't know, crime and stuff like that. It's not like top three genres. Maybe when you think about like global writers, big, huge writers who are like going beyond the genre. But like when you think about domestic writers, they still tend to, as you said, even like copy maybe that British like traditional sword and dragons, or just straight up avoid writing genre fiction?
As I see, like, for example, I was in Scotland, which was like a huge book event. What was the name? This global something, where there was George R.R. Martin and all of the big names, like, and as I experienced, like, it was like traditional fantasy, mainly with magic, and they trying to still backing that, even if they're mixing genres a bit, it's more closer to traditional fantasy than sci-fi. Like, maybe in the US it's more sci-fi, and obviously there is sci-fi in the UK as well, but I think it dominates like traditional fantasy.
Yeah, and you're self-published, right? Mainly, like, when you started writing, you written in Hungarian, and your book was initially in Hungarian. How is that like looking? I know, like, self-publishing is huge in English and like in global market, but coming from a country that isn't like that huge of a market, how does that look like? Is that still something new, or people tend to really go self-publish out there as well?
So in Hungary, when I first published my book, it was really difficult, actually, because I was tried the traditional publishers, but that was during COVID time, or like, and also like COVID aftermath, and everything was just like, no, we don't have money for that, we're gonna cutting back budgets and everything. And they just recommended me, like, okay, it looks interesting, but just finish the war trilogy and we're gonna talk about it later. And I was like, no, I finished the war book, I already have everything, we set up the website, there is the cover. So I was basically in Hungary, I was published it in a self-published way. I made a company in the UK, but it's become popular. Like, we have like a website called Moi, which is like a Goodreads. It's the same as Goodreads, it's just the Hungarian version. And it became popular there. I made a lot of connections with the traditional publishers, and they was like nice, and they recommend me for bookstores and everywhere. So it was like an indie success in Hungary, and because of that, and because of the votes on that website, I became the best fantasy of the year as well. Like, I've won an award. It was like a choice award. So then, because of the connections, and basically because I sold all of the first prints, I decided, like, okay, then go for translation and let's see like what the English market can do. And on the English market, like, obviously it's huge and it's really popular now because of print on demand, because they can just, you know, do giving them the blueprints for Amazon, for example, or Ingram Spark, and they can just in few days, they basically, you know, they're clicking on it, they buy it for like £10, and in 2 days or three, they got your book. So it's like amazing. So a lot of authors like me, they're going with this because it's super hard to get any kind of deals with the big publishers. Even if I have contact, even if I spoke with them, they need numbers, they need follower base, they need so many things. And usually they have, like, for example, like 5 slots. Like, okay, this year, this publisher can go for like a few people who is a newcomer. Okay, what we need at the moment and this market, and they're gonna check it, like, what kind of stuff you wrote, and you're not in this bucket, sorry. Even if you are good, you can be the best, doesn't matter. They have just like 5 slots.
And I want to roll back to the award that you got. First of all, congrats. I know it's been like a couple of years back, but still, it's quite a success. How did that come about? Did you like apply yourself, or you said that it was based on votes? Did that happen before that, like somebody who self-published or indie to win awards in Hungary?
I mean, these kind of voting awards that was always there. I think it was just a big thing for me because I was a newcomer. I've never published any novels or short stories or anything. That was my first ever book on my name. And I think altogether it was like almost 500 votes. So it's a lot, specifically for a small country. So it was, yeah, it was a good, great achievement. And I'm kind of proud of it. And yeah, as we'll see, like if I can at one point go for like the big awards in Hungary as well, like the actual traditional ones. But for that, you have to be, you know, published by a traditional publisher. So I can't even apply for that kind of awards.
Yeah, of course. But you show them that there is another route. Yeah. Now, like looking back at it, did you when you written it initially and tried to go with publishers, did you think that like the English translation was like a thing that would happen this quick? Was that like your initial plan? How did you go about that?
So when I first wrote the Hungarian, I was always ahead of these things, like choosing the names and the location specifically to be like translated, can be translated pretty well. So it was like a bit of English in a way, like, you know, locations, names, etc. So I was always ahead of this, like I want to translate it at one point by somehow. So for that, I was lucky to, with my connections, I found Thomas, Peters Tomás. Because he's like a really famous translator. He translated the Game of Thrones and many sci-fis. Like he's translated Asimov novels as well. He's a really great guy, and we was able to work together, which was also helped me, I think, for this success to translate my book really, really well. And I used he's a Hungarian translator. He lived in the UK for many years. But obviously, he's not a native English speaker. Okay, so he's not British. He just can translate really well. So I was hired also a guy who is like an actual native speaker, and he's an editor. And the three of us worked on it. And after that, also we we polished down a bit with another guy. So now I think it's pretty polished. There will be actually a second polished edition. So like all the small mistakes and some grammar issues what was in the first translation, it's going to be fixed as well. So
it's quite a hands-on process.
Yeah, there's always some, like in games, you like, you know, some bug fixing, I don't know. there's always small things. So we did that translation really well. And I think it's just like key of this success, because now, I can tell you that one as well. I mean, like you probably know. So I was applied for Mark Lawrence self-published competition as well. And even if I never made it in the top 10, I'm still some kind of underdog. Like my book, because of that, became popular. YouTubers picked it up, and a lot of reviewers picked it up. A lot of booktubers, blogs picked it up. So I know it was like, there's like 300 books. There's only 300 books can go in. But I can safely can say, like, I'm definitely somewhere in the top level, at least as how relevant and famous became. Maybe because of the cover, because they really love the cover. Maybe because it's a bit unique. Like most of the self-published authors, as you mentioned, they are British. They're writing in English. And many of the books, and I don't want to hurt anyone, it's like still traditional fantasy or still a bit traditional sci-fi. And because of mine is a mix, it's kind of a niche genre, but still it's a bit unique. So a lot of people who is like just want to try something new, like something completely a bit different, they could just jump into my book and they can just read it without...
Yeah, any for sure. Expectations. I think that really, really attracts attention, and like let's jump to that. Like, as you said, it's not like a huge spoiler to say it's a mixture of fantasy and sci-fi. We won't go into many details yet, but when you written it, have you always known that it's going to be like a mix of those things? Was that something that's like, did you start from the setting, or did you first like go about the story and like then like figure out how this world will look like?
So this whole story and the idea is go back for like almost 10 years now, when I first arrived to the UK. And I always wanted to be a mix. So that was one of the main point I wanted to wrote it. Because like every time when I was played video games or read books or just watching films, like most of the times you can separate these things, like is it a fantasy or is it a sci-fi. Even if Star Wars is not a sci-fi, because it's mainly a fantasy, there's no scientific things behind it, a lot of people still tend to say that's a sci-fi, but it's not. So for example, my first imagine thing was like a knight, like with a traditional knight who have like a sword and everything, but he gets a plasma gun. What he gonna do with that thing? Like, what this world gonna look like if it's still a medieval world, but he have like technological advantage over everything or anyone? Okay, I mixed this idea, but this was the basic idea like 10 years ago, and this I built it a war world around it, and then I changed the story, I changed the characters and everything, and I just only wrote it down the whole story when the world was ready. At least the areas of the world which is necessary for the story.
And how does world building look like for you? It's like a common question, but I think that each writer has their own way about it. Did you like, how deep do you go when you write it? And like, I can imagine writing, like you said, you were planning sequels. How does that look like for you? Do you like have a separate way that when you build a setting and then like pop in your characters slowly, or how does that process look like for you?
I mean, it's a bit mixed. I mean, first I was came up with the characters and I with the story, like what's the main key points I want to write in the book. And then basically I picked the traditional fantasy world and I checked them, like, okay, why is this working? Why is not working? What I want to see in my world, like why I think it's good there and everything. And then basically I started to build it around it. Like main... examples was like the Game of Thrones back then when I was wrote it, and I was thinking about like the Game of Thrones. It was a huge thing and I was love it. I love the houses and everything, that the dark medieval world, which is like closer to our past, right? Like that kind of world was like much closer to our medieval ages than for example Lord of the Rings, which is like more like traditional high fantasy, magical and nice in a way, but yeah, I want it much darker.
Yeah, it is dark. Like you can see that, like it's not copying Game of Thrones or Song of Fire and Ice, but the feeling is there, that they so call it grim dark. And there were some moments in the book that I was like, okay, wasn't expecting this. And like, because even though the prologue, we will also mention that, is kind of going straight ahead, like with tough situation for the characters, but as we move on, there is some grim stuff in there. And giving different POVs, was that also there from the start? How did you decide which characters were needed to like tell the story? And was that challenging? Because I know like trying to write multiple characters can get a bit tricky, so giving them each their perspective and their struggles, and also on top of that you have also multiple timelines, and how do you keep track of all that?
I think it was fun. I mean, it was like a challenge. I always like you know, jigsaw puzzles and everything. And for example, again, like Game of Thrones, there was multiple characters, and actually I was just wanted to test myself if I capable of doing multiple characters. I think it was like a good to make the book fast paced, basically, because every time when you're with one of the characters, something happening, and I was always try to be like adding a little, like a small cliffhanger each of the characters. So I stopping the storyline there when it's like the stakes are getting higher, and okay, we are jumping back for another character, and that is gonna happening again. So even if you don't like one of the characters, you're still gonna read it quickly because you want to get to another character you like, but then his storyline is getting interesting, so you want to stay back. And so I was think like telling a story like this was make it much quicker. And obviously, yeah, it was difficult. It was difficult to write these characters, but like, I was enjoying it. I mean, I was always that kind of person. I was always try to think everybody's else head, even if it's a man, a woman, younger, older. I tend to be like, when I was a kid, like just thinking somehow other people's head, like, okay, what they was thinking, like, why they are doing this and this. And I think it's just cool to playing with this.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's really, really cool, like seeing where their road takes them. And but there are some striking images, and as you said, the cover, that I think that your cover gets a lot of attention for a reason. It's really an awesome cover, and I think that a lot of people picked it up mainly because it caught their eye, and then on top of that, so it was an interesting mixture and everything that goes with it. Like, did you straight away know when you wrote this scene? I won't spoil the scene, but like the image that's on the cover, did you straight away go, "Oh yeah, this is it"?
So that in my head, it was always my vision, but it was like a bit difficult to put it together. And mainly, I wanted a steady, like, front face cover, and we have that beta version cover as well. But then the designer recommended to me to doing it sideways because it gives much more organic movement. I don't know, much more natural movement with the winds and the storm. So that's why it's like splitted away. So it's not from the front. It's from the what's left side, right side, whatever. I can't show. What was it? Yeah. So it's there. So this is just gives much more natural. It's like gives a movie vibe for the
car. Yeah, it's really cinematic.
Yeah, that was the plan, but that was his idea to split the beat with the angle, which was a cool idea. I accepted it. Yeah, sure. He's the designer at the end of the day.
Yeah, of course. And did you also do with him the map, or did that come by in a different way? Because you also have your map for your world, or part of the world where this story is taking place.
I drawn the map in the beginning, but then obviously, yeah, I hired it's a different artist. That's a lady. Lady girl, I mean, like, she's young, she's my age, and she drew it down specifically, which is still, there's a hidden thing with that map, and I'm not gonna reveal it until the second book, like how that map came to life. But yeah, it's like, looks like a traditional fantasy map with a lot of locations, but if someone read the book, they know, like, most of the locations we're not even visiting in the first book. We just maybe mention it, they was from there or wherever, but like, it's basically, yeah, we just in a few cities, a few kingdoms, so not visiting them. But that's because we're gonna visit them in the next books.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, you're dropping like hints and foreshadowing some things for sure, and I like that as well, because you get a sense that there is a lot of depth to this world, but you're not like shoving all of that like straight away. So I think that is a good choice.
Yeah, because otherwise it's gonna be overwhelming and taking away from the story and the focus of the characters' view, because we are going with the characters, they're going on a journey. If I adding too much details, it's gonna be like, yeah, it's just taking away from the focus from the story. There was a lot of critics, like they wanted to be more depth of the story. Maybe because of that, for the second book, I adding just a bit more, but it's gonna be still character and story focus.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, a lot of people, like, there are always people like talking about how some trends work, some things that like are done this way specifically. And for example, you have a prologue, which is, in my opinion, really strong. I really dug the prologue. And I know a lot of people, when they like, you listen to people on YouTube talking about some like rules for writing or like some trends in indie especially. And a lot of people and editors, if you listen to a lot of editors, they are opposed to prologues. But like, I think that, if done correctly, it can do really a lot for the story. So did you like think about maybe should you do a prologue, or also that like, you know, straight away this is needed to set the stage?
So the prologue, I've worked on the prologue for months, and a lot of people said like it's a really long prologue, which is true. It's super long. I mean, like, it's 50 pages at least with two characters, but this is basically setting the stage for the war book, and you can get everything from it, like what you're gonna expect for the war book. So if someone don't like the prologue, then doesn't have to read the war thing. I mean, Edward and Emma, so that they both characters, they have to read both. And if they don't like it, they're probably not gonna like the book as well. But you know, I read and see many big authors' videos, and And I always thought, like, okay, there are some blueprints you can use, but somehow it have to become from you, from your heart, your own vision. And I was like, I want to do it this way. I think it's cool. If I will be reading this, I would enjoy it. So I'm going to write in a way how I would love it. And doesn't really matter, like, what everybody going to say. The publisher going to say, editor going to say, I'm going to stick to my plan. And that's why I think it sticks to be unique. It's not perfect, obviously, nothing is perfect. But I think it kind of resonates a lot of sci-fi and fantasy fans.
Yeah, for sure. And like, it's first of all, it needs to appeal to you because you're going to be stuck with the character. So if you don't like them, how are going to people like them? So, and also thinking about like then translating it to English and you, when you read it then in English, how do those two compare? Was it like weird feeling like your words on a paper, but like not your words, if I'm making sense?
Yeah, well, I know what you mean. I mean, when I wrote the book, sometimes for key moments, key sentences, quotes, sometimes I translated for myself, even the title of the book. Before I decided, I translated for myself, like, which one gonna sounds good in English too. So I was aware of sometimes of the English. So when I actually made it in English, when we finally did it, I was like, it's maybe even cooler in English. So yeah, it was weird. It was weird, but like I was loving it. School.
And does it like in Hungarian, is it like the same meaning, or did you adapt it in English a bit, or is it basically translated to be literally the same Sealed Empire?
We tried. There are some where we changed a bit, but we always just change slightly to sound more native. It's like I can safely can say it's like 99% or 98% similar to the core Hungarian one. But again, think, because I think in Hungarian, in a Hungarian way, obviously the original will be the best. Like sometimes the sentences sounds much better. The whole story, how it goes, it's obviously going to be better on the original. But I think it's pretty well done for an English book. That's how I think.
And thinking about your background, how did that impact like the setting or the characters? What are some things that like you would maybe tie into like being Hungarian and like generally being European? Because for me, it's interesting that like a lot of specifically American authors tend to like use a generally medieval European setting and something that's more geographically closer to you and even me, and like some like things that happened in the past and vaguely, as you said, medieval times. How do you think that like correlates with building a world like this?
Well, for me, I always loved history. I born in Hungary, which is have a rich history. Like it's always wars every time. So I think my one is purely can represent a medieval world, like a dark. How was it? Okay, so it's no sugarcoating or something. Or maybe a bit. I mean, like, because it can be much darker. I really wanted to write it a bit more darker, but I was trying to limit myself. But yeah, maybe the second book is a bit darker again. But the second book is a bit more sci-fi-ish. But yeah, it's a spoiler, so I'm not gonna say much more. But yeah, how is it correlates? I met some American authors as well. Obviously, they have to check the European history, and they probably have to study a bit more and feel it a bit more and read more, because they doesn't have that kind of historical knowledge, I guess, to represent, I don't know, I don't say perfectly, but like, you know, well, that
yeah. Word,
as us, who is like basically from your grandparents to the normal school, that's what you just hear and hear and hear. How was it in the medieval? And like, yeah.
Yeah, and
it comes for me a bit more easier way, I guess. But I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. And like then dropping the unexpected element into it. And without spoiling the future developments of the story, do you already know like where the characters are going full on? Like, do you know where your end point is, or like discovering it along the way?
Just for a second, I going back. If you check the American fantasy artists, the most successful ones, they write urban fantasies for mm-hmm. cities. And if you check the traditional fantasies, which I mentioned, like usually they're mainly British.
That makes sense.
Yeah, even like Mark, who is like Mark Lawrence, kind of good buddies. he's wrote like a mixed genre, which is mainly traditional fantasy. So his works, like especially his first trilogy, the Broken Empire one, that's traditional fantasy with some mix, but it's not like mine, which already in the prologue I introducing this kind of things. But yeah, he's American, but he's also British and he's living in Britain.
Thinking about like future parts and like story going forward, you also already hinted you have a couple books planned out, but do you already know like what's the end point for your characters? Do you know well where's like the end point for you? You know exactly where you're taking them, or they like go about it like step by step, figuring it out with them? What's kind of your style?
Yeah, so usually I always know what's the end point. And I'm making the road to them. So usually I know the beginning and the end and what experiences and trauma and whatever has to happen during the book. And I'm making the road to them. But sometimes it changes. I mean, I know already like what I'm planning for the end of the trilogy. But I have like at least three endings. And it's different. For the end, I'm not 100% sure yet. But for like the second book, which is like almost done-ish. Yeah, I was mainly know like what I want to do. I was know everything like, okay, what's the end point? Where the characters have to be at the end? What kind of development they have to do and so on. I think it's good, it's necessary. But yeah, like for side characters and some side events, it's just coming along with via writing and like, oh, this is a really cool idea. I should implement. Okay, this is gonna affect the story. Okay, but it still can work my original ideas, so I can implement it. So yeah.
And do you like test out some elements with some like better readers or people who you share this with? How early do you share your work with someone? Do you like for the second book? How far along do you wait to get before like showing it to somebody else?
Usually I'm showing them when I feel it's the story is ready to read, and I don't really want to drastically change it. I can add some extra pages if they want some clarification. I can change the grammar. This is how it was in the first book. But for the second book, because I probably gonna get a traditional publisher in Hungary as well. They probably gonna give me some suggestions for the editing part. But we're gonna see. I mainly don't like to, if they're forcing me to change big things, like small things fine, to make it more realistic or make it more scientific or making a bit, like changing a few, what's that? Chapters, because that was in the first book as well. I think I switched one or two, but it was like a puzzle anyway. So yeah, it's fine if they think this is easier that way. I'm fine, but usually, yeah, I'm really stubborn. I stick with my things, and I'm a hardhead. Like if they don't like it, well, I published the first one anyway. They love it, so sorry, I'm gonna go with mine. I trust myself.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Like, it's really like great feeling when you trust yourself and your story. But like seeing first in Hungarian, as you said, like a lot of reviews coming in on your website, and then like seeing Goodreads reviews. Fortunately, you do have some like really good reviews. But how did that like look for you starting out? Now, like you have fairly a few reviews. Like you can see fairly big number for like an indie author, but in the beginning when they just like started rolling out, how did you react to your reviews, and how does that like do you sit on like reading them, do they hit you in any way, how does that look like for you?
Obviously, as a first newcomer author, for the first 20 review ish 30, it was like, yeah, oh, okay, I really want to know, like, how is it? Are they enjoying it, not enjoying it? Because obviously this is your child. You're working with it for years. So even if you think, I think it's super cool, and obviously family and friends, they're not gonna ruin it. So they're gonna say, it's like, okay, it was cool. Maybe they don't like this and this, but they obviously they're gonna say, oh yeah, it was good. But when you're getting reviews from people like never met, you're not paying for them for the review or something. Maybe you just give them a book to just, okay, just give me an honest opinion, doesn't matter. And slowly when you're getting like really honest reviews, yeah, that part is when it's crucial. Yeah, so I was read all of them. I was excited every day to read them. And then after 20, 30, you are maybe safely can say that. Oh, they enjoy it as well. Maybe they have some problems, but fine. This can be perfect for everyone, right? I have to find my audience who love these kind of things. And it was the same with English. When that was the even bigger success for me, because it's a translated book, okay? So it's not the original or something. It can be misleading, whatever. It can be. And then a lot of people enjoyed as well. So it was good in English too. So this must be something like the stories should be good, or the characters should be good. So.
Yeah, for sure. And I think a lot of people from like Eastern Europe, I mean a lot, I've noticed quite a few of them like taking like some, let's say, stage names or pseudonyms, and like people write under different names because they're worried that like Western audiences wouldn't react well to their name or pick up the books because of the name. And I always kind of find it weird, because the competition is stiff. Like either way, you have a lot of people coming into the indie space, self-publishing space, and I don't think that like the name is gonna change anything. But did you maybe come by some people like that, or did you think about that as a factor?
Yeah, I mean, like Western entertainment with films, games, whatever, it was dominant in the recent years and centuries, actually, with books. But I don't think it's a thing now. That is a global world now. A lot of things changing, and actually even readers are, I think, kind of bored of this kind of things. Like, it's another Rob, it's another Wright, it's another James. They can't even remember this kind of thing. So like, even publishers now, they recommend today the authors to just use your original name. I was thinking about as well, like, maybe you should change my name for the English. Though I was like, no, I'm not gonna change it. I already published on my name, and I think it's unique enough to can be like interesting. And I think there is a lot of readers who actually want this kind of things. Like, there is a lot of nice Polish, Russian, and like any kind of non-English fantasy and sci-fi books. And I think they actually want that. They want a different view, because it's not written by an English person. It's written by a native, an Eastern Europe person or whatever. And they want their view, their perspective.
Yeah, because I think... Yeah, sorry. You okay?
No. That's it. That's it.
Yeah, just wanted to point out, like, as you said, like Polish, obviously The Witcher is there. Also, we have like some post-apocalyptic stuff, like you have Metro 2033 and that series that were also translated to games. And I think that like in that way, like especially that those works being adapted for the screen, for games, for series, I think that really is like pushing the envelope in that way. And for me, it's really great to see like a lot of people, especially because those stories, and as we mentioned as well, fantasy and even some sci-fi, they do have deep roots in Europe. And it's interesting like seeing that it's slowly becoming a trend to like see something from the authors that were basically here all along, and like compared to stories that were told by somebody else about basically the world that's closer to us.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think all of the stories is written down now. Like, I don't say is there is no chance to come up with something new, but like, I think the only way now is mixing things. And this background mix, like for example me, like I'm a Hungarian author, but I grew up on Western media, but also I read Eastern Europe things, and I'm mixing this genre with my a bit mixed idea. This is gonna be something new, or just I telling a story in a different way. The story we already read like 100 times, but it's in a different way, and it's unique. Now it's cool. So maybe this is what a bit missing now from the Western publishing or films. Most of the times, like I don't say all of them, but like they just want to make money or something, which is like safe to sell. That's how I see. And now with self-published authors all around, with Amazon, everybody can basically write their own stories. They can edit it. They can hire someone. Even now, with AI, you can make covers, but it's better if you hire someone because it will be much cooler.
Yeah.
And you can publish your story and let the audience say like how it is. But obviously, you have to marketing it much, much more.
But, and yeah, how's that side looking for you? Like, are you close to marketing? Do you like think about what things need to be done as a self-published author? Do you like tend to consult somebody about that? I know that's like a frequent topic for self-published authors, but still it's quite relevant because there is a lot of stuff out there and you need to get to your readers.
So this is my luck. I always did this kind of things. I mean, like sales and marketing, and I'm studying still marketing. I'm going to graduate literally in the next months. That's why the second book is late that much. I mean, it's almost done, but like I just doing the uni. So I want to finish the uni. That's at the moment that's the number one priority, and the second is the book. So, and I don't wanna ruin the second book just because I'm rushing it and like, oh okay, I have to publish it in 2 years, and I'm like, ooh. No. I let that go. I'm gonna finish the school and then I'm gonna publish the book, but at least it's gonna be a good book. From my opinion, at least it's not going to be rushed. So yeah, marketing is a crucial point. Without marketing, self-published author, you can do shit. Sorry. It's like marketing is a bigger part than the actually writing the book, because you have to sell it. But I think it goes with everything. I mean, whatever product you do, you have to sell it somehow. You have to find your market. You have to find your customers in a way. This is an entertainment market. It's like a book market, where it's like every day there is, I don't know how many books are published. But if you just check on Kindle for my category with this fantasy and sci-fi, I think it's like at least 500,000 books. And how much time a person have, like a few hours a day where they can maybe read a book, but they can also watch Netflix, they also can play a game. These all the things you are fighting with. Like me as a person, I can watch a series, I can read something, and also I can play something that few hours I have in a day for entertainment. So you are fighting with all of them. So if you don't have a marketing somehow, then it's already dead. And I think my book is kind of, in an indie level, successful because I'm doing some marketing.
And
I could be done much more, and I will.
Of course.
At the moment, school.
Yeah, I think that's unavoidable. It comes like with the territory of being self-published. But I think that, as you said, like competing with other stuff. I recently heard, I'm not sure about the source, but thinking about gaming, that at the same time, like gaming hours for people who are gamers are going up. People are playing more hours. But overall, like casual gamers are going down, the number of casual gamers. So basically people who are into it and like are more into the hobby, they're playing even more, but a lot of people who are casual are drawn to other stuff like socials, streaming. So I guess it could be similar to books as well, because you're now competing with so much stuff. And also, as you said, there is competition, but as you also mentioned, AI for covers, I think that people are now starting to do more and more like things that are very, very heavily lifted by AI, if not completely written. So I think that the good thing is that the audience recognizes the voice. And I think that even though like there is a lot of stuff out there, people do tend to gravitate towards to somebody who has a voice and like trust their own story. So I think at least for a while, we don't have to worry about that much.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, actually. I don't know what is coming. That's why I'm going to just finish my trilogy as soon as I could in a great quality. And let's see in 10 years what we're going to read or what kind of stories we're going to watch. Because maybe just big studio is going to just hire AI to write a cool story which can sell. And that's it.
Yeah, there is still some strong pushback on that, and hopefully it will remain that way. I think, I mean, it's not, I'm not all for like making like AI look like something that should be forbidden. There is a place for that, but as well, I think making a difference between like using it as a tool, as you said, to do some like basic editing before you go to a professional editor to just like clean it up a bit or like some typos, stuff like that. But when you put your whole story into that and like studios just want to make a whole story with that, I think that we still have some time to like people don't respond well to that. So hopefully I'm optimistic for that.
Yeah, I'm optimistic as well, because I still can see what an AI can do. And what it's missing is always the human element. And maybe it can copying everything, everything is written or something. But all of the books, all of the stories and great characters usually are great or closer to our heart because they are really human. What you wrote as a human wrote a human person in a good way. How to explain? It's not going to be perfect. What AI do is usually super perfect. They can do a really perfect line or something. But in reality, for example, if you wrote a sentence like a conversation in a book, it's not going to be perfect, because in a real life, the conversation is not perfect either. And this small imperfect things are going to make the story actually realistic, I think, to feel yourself in it. Like small details in a world where they're living or doing, how they feel in a moment, and it resonates with the author when he wrote it, and it's going to resonate with the reader. This is the part where what the AI can do at the moment. And I think I don't know when it's gonna make it or not gonna make it, because it's just gonna copy it, but it's never gonna feel it.
Mm.
If you understand.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a great point. The imperfections are what makes it personal and human.
Yeah.
For sure.
So that's why I think that we still have some time. But then that's why I said like AI is nothing like in the past few years.
Mm.
But when I wrote the first book, there was no ChatGPT. Now there is ChatGPT, and it was just a few years ago. So I don't know what's going to happen in 10 years. We're going to see. But hopefully what I said with these feelings and everything, imperfections, is going to still stays.
Fingers crossed about that. But also talking about entertainment and film, I also saw on your Goodreads page that you're working on some scripts as well. I can imagine with uni and writing the second book, that's taken a backseat. But could you tell us a bit about that? What were you also working on?
So it's actually not a really big secret. Maybe I mentioned it in other interviews. But yeah, so I have some connections with producers to Netflix and Amazon, and I'm working on for some Black Mirror style scripts, which can be easily sell to Netflix as a Black Mirror story or as an actual movie, like a short movie or story, or it can be a one night movie. It depends. I'm working on it. I have like three different ideas. One of them is like pretty well done now, but still, yeah, main focus school, then the second book, and that's the third. So that's some scripts, because I want to try some actual scripts for movies and for series, even for the another one. What was that? the love deaths and robots.
Yeah.
Yeah. I imagine my prologue as an animated version. I think it could be easily fit for that series as a, like a, you know, as a 10 minutes, 15 minutes prologue.
Yeah, I can see it working. Also, there was recently the Amazon, I don't know what the name of the series, but the one where they did like a bunch of game IPs where they made shorts from like spanning from like Warhammer to, I don't know, like God of War, like a bunch of stuff. They like made some shorts, short animated shorts in the universe.
Yeah, I see that, but I never watched that. Yeah, I mean, I will gonna watch it, but
yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's like it has its ups and downs because like the IPs are different and like the quality varies. But it's an interesting project. But working on those scripts, how different it is from like, I know that there are some key differences, but like for you specifically in your process, when you approach like writing an idea, a story that could be pitched as a limited series or a film, compared to the Sealed Empire, like what's the main difference when you work on it?
Well, the main difference is I'm working in English, so that one I completely write in English. Another one is like a totally different structure. As for example, for a script, you have to be aware, like, okay, this is gonna be shooter, so you have to add things. How is the lightning? How is the characters? What they are doing? So it's like it's different because you know it's gonna be an actual scene where we be actors, or on animated, it's also different. But you have to slide note instructions, like how they are, okay, holding their hand, or how they should look. And usually, like, one page is like, it's like 1 minute. It depends on the dialogue. So there is plenty of other things you have to be focused on.
It's and is different. That timing the like one of the biggest challenges, the setting the pace for it?
Yeah. Like sometimes it sounds good on paper, but in reality it's not. I mean, I love to try these kind of things. So like when I first came up with this idea, Sealed Empire one, I was thinking about to write as a script for movie, and also I was thinking about making a comic book with a lot of graphics. But then I just skipped it and like, okay, I'm just gonna wrote it as a book. It's much easier because as a movie, it's gonna be ultimate high budget. Nobody gonna be just like that, like, okay, yeah, sure, we're gonna do it. No, it's cost a lot. Even if it's an animated series, it's gonna be cost a lot. And also as a comic book, it was like, okay, finding an artist to do that and like, blah, oh no. Because also comic books is not selling as well as traditional books like this. So I was like, okay, it's easier just to write as a normal book.
But you are a comic fan, like, do you read a lot of comics?
Yeah, I love comics as well. Yeah. I mean, I'm a geek in a way, like, I'm playing, reading everything. That's my life.
Yeah, I can relate, and I have to drop in the thing that we talked about off camera. You mentioned that you are somewhat of a professional gamer. You said you're not a professional, but like competing in Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, it was like before the book. Yeah, that was we have a small team, and yeah, we played Mortal Kombat X in competition, and that was in Serbia. I mean, we was in Serbia, and they was in Hungary as well. And I don't know how many was on, like it's more than 30 people I think in that competition at least, and I ended up the fourth place, almost third. But it was still like a big achievement. Like I was played a lot, like hundreds of hours to do that combos and everything. You know, you're choosing a few characters and you're practicing them like a lot.
Yeah, that discipline. I think that kind of you can use that in finishing your books, because the discipline it takes to perfect some of these things in like Mortal Kombat, Tekken, whatever, it takes some time.
Yeah, definitely. How about the Serbian guys? They was like a next level. Honestly, they was crazy.
Yeah.
I'm really proud. At least I made it to be somewhere around or the top three. I was played with Kenshi, if you familiar with Mortal Kombat 1, with that blind samurai.
Mm-hmm.
He was so cool.
Yeah, it checks out. I think that, like, I can picture now the aesthetic, like, piecing together your work and now picking Kenshi in Mortal Kombat. It tracks.
Well, yeah, there is some small things, yes.
Yeah, great, Norbert. And before I let you go, like, you mentioned the second book, but could you walk us through, like, what's your plans for the next couple of years? I know, like, things change and everything, like, gets hectic, but what's your ideal timeline now for your series and other work as well?
So, second book, it's around the corner. I always telling to everyone, everywhere. Nobody believes me now because I told a lot of times, like, yeah, it's going to be in 2 years, and it's already 4. But I'm not George R. R. Martin, okay? I was actually busy, okay? I'm not a millionaire to just getting money from the books, and this is my only job. No, I'm still working, I'm still studying, I still have, like, some kind of person, I'm still marketing my book. So, yeah, it's a lot of work. But, yeah, the second book is almost done. So at least the draft version, but I still need months to polish it down to be like hit the spot for me, at least. I'm a perfectionist in a way. So second book, maybe end of this year or the beginning of next year, but it's almost done. So that's the second. And then as quick as possible, I'm gonna finish the third one. So the War Trilogy. That's probably going to be much quicker because I already wrote some things for the third. And the whole roadmap, the notes. So I worked a lot on the third one as well because it's connecting together with the second, obviously. I don't say I wrote the two books all together, but I worked on the third one much more than when it was in the first book because it was mainly just the first book. It was just maybe a side note for the second one in my head was the rest. But for the third now, it's much more things ready. So that's going to be the next. And maybe one of that Black Mirror style story I mentioned. I really want to publish, like, make a deal for that. And we'll see. I mean, like, I have plenty, many plans with the whole series. I have, like, video game ideas. I'm trying to sell out as much rights for different translations. So maybe you know, like, that it's already translated to Italian, and there will be other ones as well, which I not pronounced yet, but I will. And sorry, if I'm not gonna do it here because I also planning to make a video when I gonna announce that ones. But, like, the future is pretty bright for my series actually, and I want to pitch also for board games. I have an idea for that. I have connections for that. So, like, it's gonna build it up.
Awesome.
So don't surprise if you in the next few years you're gonna see board games or trilogies in multiple languages. And yeah, we'll see. Maybe one point a video game, because I think the word I build it up is suits for a good video game.
Yeah, I can see it. Perfect. I'm really, really hoping that pans out for you, and I'll be waiting for it. I'm lucky that I only recently read your book, so I don't have to wait as much as some people did. So for me, it will be pretty quick then, and hopefully everything that you mentioned pans out. Yeah, well, I'll be keeping an eye out for sure. Yeah, when some of that stuff comes out, I'll have you back on Storyline Sessions, and when you're super huge, hopefully you'll get back on here and chat with me some more.
Sure. Of course. Reach out like you did, and that's it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, maybe I can visit you as well, or you can visit me.
I really hope we can make that happen. Yeah, we'll be in touch for sure. So, Norbert, thank you for coming on to Storyline Sessions. It was a pleasure. We'll definitely share everything we've talked about in the description, on Instagram, wherever we happen to be. So we'll keep people posted, and yeah. We'll look out for the sequel for the Sealed Empire. For people who have missed it, now is your opportunity to check up on that. And yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah, the title will be Sealed War. That's the second one.
Nice, Sealed War. That's a great way to end it. Thank you again, Norbert. Have a great rest of the day, and we'll be in touch.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Storyline Sessions. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. You can find Norbert using the links below. I won't give you any promises, but I'm hoping to post a lot more on this channel, other streaming platforms, and social media. So if you're interested in storytelling in any kind of media, keep following Storyline Sessions. My name is Marco, and I'll see you next time. Keep creating stories.